Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you're listening to Teen Scientist. You can also find us on WDIY.org for more Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Raina Malhotra, your host this evening, and doing our audio engineering is James Johnson. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring to you groundbreaking innovation in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and business entirely from a teenage perspective. We also highlight excellence in independent research and technological developments. I myself am a sophomore from Moravian Academy, and today on air I have special guests Hyunok Choi and Emily Grace. Dr. Choi is an epidemiologist and professor at Lehigh University, where she studies environmental origins of asthma. Hi, Professor Choi, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having us.
That's great to hear. And along with Professor Choi, we have Emily Grace, an undergraduate student from Lehigh University who has also been working on this asthma research. How are you, Emily?
I'm doing well.
It's great to have you both with us on air today. After discussing your backgrounds and experiences in epidemiology, we'll move on to how your research specifically may impact the future of human health and the developmental consequences of chemical exposures in asthma. Does that sound good with you both?
Sounds great.
Let's jump right into it then. Professor Choi, if you don't mind, could you begin by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, your education, and your background?
Sure. I am what's called an environmental epidemiologist, meaning that I look at the environmental trend in multiple types of pollution, human exposure to pollution, including those that we get exposed through air, water, food, and skin absorption. And I look at exposure throughout one's life, starting in conception. And I love to follow human beings repeatedly over the life course and measure how this early life exposure to multiple types of environmental pollutants affect your health throughout your life.
And you recently joined Lehigh in January. How have you been liking it so far?
Oh, wow. So I just love being here. I feel that I've been sent here for a reason. It's quite fortuitous that I would work on air pollution and I would get sent to an area that suffers acutely and chronically from air pollution. So, I mean, I love the culture here, I love the food scene here, and most of all, I love the kindness in almost everyone that I've met here. So, yeah, I just am loving it here.
That's great to hear. And how were you inspired to pursue a career in epidemiology? How did you get onto this career path?
It's interesting. I was looking for a project. I was looking for a job at the same time as a doctoral student. So I was looking for a way to fund my studies at Columbia University and at the same time work on a project that's going to become my doctoral dissertation. And I saw this ad by Professor Frederica Pereira looking for a student to work on prenatal exposure to very well-known carcinogen called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and how they affect the developmental consequences of newborns and infants in both the U.S. and also in Poland. So I just walked into her office one day and just felt like a really kind of a divine intervention in some ways. I intuited that it was a very important project, both for me and for the people that I work for. And for some interesting reason, I never veered off from believing that in the last 15 years. So I believe it's a true love. And I've never veered off from believing that in the last decades.
And you mentioned you went to Columbia University. Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly you studied while you were there?
So I majored in environmental health sciences. I studied with Dr. Frederica Pereira, who was one of the first people who began to study how the environmental pollutants such as benzene and air pollution could be measured within our body, you know, using blood, for example. And that's important because that was the very first time that we were able to measure how these pollutants actually alter our DNA. And they have developmental and long-term consequences in cancer development. So that was the beginning of a new era called beginning of molecular epidemiology. So I somehow just walked in and have been enjoying working in that area since.
All right, that's really fascinating. And now moving on to Emily, could you share with us how old you are, your interests, and what you've been studying at Lehigh?
So I'm 20 years old. I would say my primary interests are healthcare and healthcare economics. So really looking at kind of the political, economic, and social factors that all go into our healthcare system. And I'm majoring in population health and economics. So I'm doing two majors.
And how did you get started studying epidemiology and the health impacts of air pollution?
So I actually applied to work on Professor Choi's research team as a part of a program Lehigh does called the Mountaintop Experience, where basically I get paid a stipend to do research with Professor Choi for the summer as well as some other students. And I found her project particularly interesting. So in my application, I indicated that I would really like to be a part of her project specifically. And then I discussed with her kind of outside of the application process a little bit more about what the project would actually entail.
Well, thank you both for letting us know a bit about yourselves. Before we start discussing your recent research, Professor Choi, could you share with us some statistics about air pollution and how it's become such a prominent issue in our area?
Sure. So Pennsylvania is really interesting and unique in that it is one of the hubs of the American Industrial Revolution. So since the beginning of 1900s, I mean, Pennsylvania has had multiple cities that served as the industrial hubs, attracting, you know, young, healthy workers. So that in turn has meant that these areas that are located within the valley, such as Pittsburgh, Lehigh Valley, have been associated with a number of health outcomes such as asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases, even death. So what we do know is that as of today, worldwide, about 300 million people suffer from asthma and that about 30 million people would die from it all over the world. And within the U.S., I mean, Pennsylvania represents one of the areas that particularly suffers from high burden of asthma. So, for example, with every 1 unit increase in exposure, human exposure to particulate matter that has an aerodynamic diameter of 2.5 micrometer, we have to spend about $1.3 million, extra $1.3 million to take care of them. So this is actually a very conservative estimate, and that burden is particularly heavier on indigent population and population of color. So we're looking at really large segment of Pennsylvania population that suffer from issues such as environmental justice, where if you are from a poor background or belong to an ethnic or racial minority, you are much more likely to suffer from the higher exposure to environmental pollution, and also from the higher likelihood of developing some type of diseases associated with the air pollution and other types of environmental pollution.
Could you explain what exactly you've been researching to fix this issue?
Boy, so before we could propose to fix the issue, we first need to quantify as precisely as possible what the increase in exposure to what I called particulate matter less than 2.5 micrometer in aerodynamic diameter, and what they do to children. So to use asthma as an example, before we get into asthma, there is this fascinating hypothesis called Barker's hypothesis, which speculates that if you are exposed to the air pollution when you are in your mother's womb, you are much more likely to suffer from a whole host of consequences, including asthma, obesity, depression, and even cancer during adulthood. So if we were to quantify the human health effects of all host of these health outcomes and were to act on them when the children are really young, we're much more effective in terms of preventing much more serious health consequences, including adulthood health consequences, including cancer, obesity, very severe form of asthma, and other types of illnesses. So this is why I focus on children's health outcome by understanding the mechanisms of air pollution health effects when children are most at highest risk of developing a whole host of health outcomes. We have the highest chance also at the same time of preventing these serious health consequences. So my research in a nutshell is focused on understanding the mechanistic pathways of asthma in very young children between the ages of 0 to 6.
And as a student, Emily, how have you been able to contribute to this project?
I was able to contribute to this project a lot through kind of the exploratory data analysis that Professor Choi was talking about. So when I kind of jumped into the project, we were just starting to try to map the data. And so we could look at specific geographic features that might play a role in the distribution of the pollution. So we were really looking at a bunch of different things like toxic release facilities. So those are like incinerators or other things that create kind of a very large point source of pollution, as well as different metrics for pollution that are from non-point sources, so different types of air pollutants. We were also looking at weather patterns, trying to basically discern geographic patterns for the prevalence of asthma and the quantity of pollutants.
Now, I would love to continue discussing this with you both, but we do need to pause right now for a quick break. When we return, we'll continue discussing how your research specifically may impact the future of human health and developmental consequences. This is Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, in the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
This is Marcy Lightwood, a WDIY member and volunteer since 1995. If you find that you must take a minimum distribution from your IRA this year, consider an IRA charitable rollover. It will allow you to minimize your tax obligations, meet your required minimum distribution, and make a contribution to WDIY, our NPR member station for more than 26 years.
Welcome back to Teen Scientists on WDIY. I'm Raina Malhotra, your host, and once again, I'm here with Professor Hyunok Choi from Lehigh University, along with a student of hers, Emily Grace. Emily just finished explaining her contributions to this research. Professor Choi, a major aspect of your research investigated the impact of chemical exposures on childhood illnesses. Could you go into more depth and explain the actual developmental consequences in prenatal or postnatal exposures to environmental pollution?
Sure. So the leading thinking, and this is still a hypothesis which is still being actively investigated and tested. It's not a validated fact yet, but a very strong hypothesis. But the leading thinking is that human beings are very vulnerable, particularly when we are in this very young stage. And this is why we need to, as a society, work, collaborate, and work towards protecting the most vulnerable. And that is our youngest and perhaps our oldest segments of our population. And the source of vulnerability comes from the fact that, I mean, we have virtually no defense mechanisms when we are in our mother's womb. And another thing is that whatever we experience during that prenatal period has such a profound impact in our developmental programming, so much so that what we are witnessing in our data is that what we are exposed to during our prenatal developmental window not only increases the risk of being born with low birth weight, having a low small head for birth weight, but also having an elevated risk of developing obesity during your childhood and also developing asthma during childhood. We have not yet had a chance to look into what that means when these children grow into adults. But what we strongly suspect is that these are all very ominous signs where human body kind of gets knocked down like dominoes, and that cumulative effects of these adverse health consequences cumulatively have more and more serious health consequences, such as cancer.
What would you say are some precautions that can be taken to avoid these negative effects of air pollution?
So I would say prevention is probably the most important thing. So if you are young and if you are a young mother and if you are pregnant or if you live with elderly, I would avoid going out and working out or walking to school in particularly cold days in winter and when the weather air pollution episode happens. It's also a great idea to keep your home relatively dry and free of mold and insecticides, and to keep your home generally clean and well ventilated.
Going back to Emily, most would assume in younger generations there are newer and different ways of raising awareness and sharing valuable information. So as a college student, how do you think these younger generations can make an impact and help mitigate the effects of environmental pollution?
I think that education is the best resource because it is obviously pretty difficult to avoid some of the pollutants as they're just kind of in our atmosphere. But definitely educating people maybe before they have kids about special precautions they need to take while they might be pregnant, or even just to protect themselves and young children. I think the education is really the best resource.
And what platforms do you think we could use to educate these generations?
I think that a growing resource that's been particularly valuable has been social media. I think that social media both provides a platform for people to speak on individual experience, maybe personal injuries they've had due to air pollution, but also a way to spread scientific fact in conjunction with those stories. So you can kind of really get the full picture out to a mass audience relatively easily without a lot of work.
And then back to Professor Choi, how do you think your research may impact the future of human health and environmental pollution?
Wow, that's a really profound and big question. I'm hoping that this ultimately empowers the citizens to take up the issue on their own hands and demand better policies, more protective policies. As Emily had discussed just now, education is critical, but young people and older generations being engaged in the discussion and demanding action through confidence and also, I mean, believing in their voice is also critical. So I would say, I mean, education is only part of the picture. Involvement, voicing your concern, and demanding action is also very, very important.
Many listeners of Teen Scientists are really interested in pursuing a career in STEM fields. Is there anything you could share with our teen listeners who think epidemiology is a future for them?
Epidemiology is a fascinating science because it is highly interdisciplinary, meaning that you have to be, in a way, an expert in multiple fields. So you get to learn about how all these different fields work together to contribute to human suffering. And then it's up to you to interpret that science, to engage with multiple stakeholders to affect changes. So by that, I mean that you could be involved in epidemiology, not only as a scientist, but also as a scientific communicator, scientific interpreter. You could become advocates for translation. So there are multiple ways to be engaged. Most important thing I would say is to recognize what you're most passionate about and to feel confident in your passion to pursue it without fear.
And Emily, what piece of advice do you wish you could give your past aspiring high school self that would be helpful for our teen listeners?
I think definitely it's important to keep your options open as far as what you want to study or what you want to be doing as a career. I know that I really tended to pick something and lock myself down to it. And I think that that's a really easy way to turn down a lot of opportunities. It could really teach you a lot. Like, I think that I didn't really know much about epidemiology before I started this project. And it was really helpful for me to learn along the way and to develop that knowledge with kind of this very practical application of doing actual research. I think it's much more valuable than a classroom setting. So I think definitely keeping your options open, taking all the opportunities you can find, and really honing your interests through trying rather than thinking.
And Professor Choi, what else would you like our listeners to know about you, your research, and the future of environmental pollution on public health?
I would say the teen scientists' voice really matter. So diversity is incredibly important now more than ever. So I would encourage all high school students to be confident in what they believe and to pursue their passion with conviction and confidence.
Finally, where can our listeners go to find more information about your research?
You could start by checking out the College of Health at Lehigh University website to get to know my research a little bit better. And you're welcome to contact us at the College of Health to learn more about how you could be involved in research, communication, education, and translation.
Thank you both for taking the time to be with us today. It's been amazing to hear about your work and inspiring to other young high school students.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This was such a pleasure to share my work.
Yes, thank you.
Of course. It was a pleasure to talk with you both, and we can't wait to see where your research takes you in the future. Right now, we're going to pause for a break, but when we return, I have a special guest, Mikhail Jaffer, a senior from Moravian Academy. This is Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Connect to WDIY with our streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices. Welcome back to Teen Scientist on WDIY. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra. With me today, I have a special guest and a friend of mine from Moravian Academy, Mikhail Jaffer. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. And thank you for having me today.
Of course. Could you start off just by introducing yourself? We know you go to Moravian, but how old are you and what grade you're in?
Well, like Raina mentioned, my name's Mikhail Jaffer, and I'm in 12th grade, which means I'm 17 years old.
And what are your interests? What fields does most of your research involve?
Yeah, so I'm heavily interested in topics like biology, engineering, and computer programming.
Interesting. Okay. And you told me a story earlier today that coding and science wasn't always an interest and hobby of yours, but you kind of started randomly when you were in the hospital with your grandfather. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so when I was in elementary school, my grandfather had a stroke. And so for a majority of the summer, we were in the hospital. And so with like a lack of activities to do, computer programming became a hobby of mine. And the way that like interest developed is one day we were going to the car and I got frustrated because someone left the car keys inside the house again. And so I was just wondering, like, what if we could develop an app on the phone that would allow people to like have their car keys on their phone? And that interest of like trying to develop an app led me to computer programming.
Nice. And that's also a great example that you don't always need to like have a detailed set out plan for what fields you want to pursue, but it can kind of be random based off of experiences. What were some of the initial projects that you worked on right after you got interested, like in middle school?
So in middle school, I really had like a strong interest in drones, especially because that was like the booming era of development for them. So I like planned to build my own drone because they were like relatively expensive at the time. And so my science fair project that year was trying to build my own drone and compare it to commercially manufactured ones to see if mine would outperform them. And I mean, from there, my engineering and computer science endeavors just kind of grew. And like in high school, I worked with a professor at Lehigh University to develop different types of like graphene-based inks that conduct electricity so I could make like a t-shirt that could take like human body heat and turn it into electricity for developing areas. And also in 10th grade, I took that drone project I worked on in middle school and try to make the drone completely autonomous.
So you clearly seem to be very busy with coding and computer science, but what are some of your other interests or extracurriculars that you're involved in?
Yeah, so at school, I play soccer on the school soccer team, as well as participate in debate and the business club.
Well, now transitioning more into your research, there was a news article on Lehigh Valley Live in August of 2020 about your new COVID rapid detection initiative. Could you delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, so this was a project that originally started in like the mid to early 2020 year. And so that was kind of started out as just like a project to see what we could do with like AI during the time. And it like sparked from a hackathon that I worked on with a few people I met online. And so from there, we kind of used the technology we made during the Facebook hackathon, which was originally used for detecting like pneumonia and different type of respiratory diseases, and applied that to COVID-19. And this allowed us to use the like application on like computers and different type of software devices to detect like COVID-19 from x-rays. And you could process like thousands of x-rays in a few seconds and have like 95 to 97% accuracy.
And how exactly does that work?
So basically, the way the like machine learning algorithm works is it takes like a data set of X-ray images. A key part of like artificial intelligence and machine learning is actually trying to make the data set like perfectly formulated, because if you have it too specific in one region or inspecific in another, it will kind of be very fitted. And what you want is it to be like a little bit on the broader side, just so that you can detect for more and abnormal cases rather than just having it detect for specific things. So the way this kind of algorithm worked is you fed it a data set full of X-ray images of respiratory, like lung X-rays, as well as like COVID-19 X-rays and normal X-rays. And as long as you classified them within the data set, the algorithm would process it and take like key detection factors from the images and apply that to images you were feeding it in order to detect or determine which like illness the X-ray had.
And what are the long-term impacts of your findings?
So in the long term, essentially what it will help with is, one, giving state-of-the-art technology basically for developing countries and areas, especially in places that are under-resourced. Like take certain countries or parts of Africa and South America where, like during the COVID-19 pandemic, they didn't have many testing resources. And especially in parts of like the US and the UK, getting results back for your test was taking up to 2 weeks, especially if you were getting X-rays done. With technology like this, you can process the like data and the X-ray images at a much faster rate, as well in these developing areas where they're just under-resourced. You can have this technology be like early detection and rapid detection to prevent outbreaks of large magnitudes.
And what does the future look like for this project? Are you going to continue developing it?
So right now what's happened with the project is I've taken it to a professor at a local university, and we've kind of pivoted the topic. And so instead of just applying this to COVID-19, we're testing right now is a little bit more feasible, especially in these developed areas. We're kind of trying to create a artificial intelligence toolkit for a developing areas and under-resourced countries so that they can use like a technology that they can download on a computer or a phone and use it to detect or diagnose a slew of diseases and illnesses, since they don't have the state-of-the-art technology that we have here in like the US or other developed countries.
Well, that's all really interesting and impressive. Right now, we are going to pause for a short break, but when we return, we'll continue our discussion with Mikhail and learn more about protein folding. This is Raina Malhotra on Teen Scientist.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. Each month's special focus highlights an artist, label, or event with the featured CD at midnight. That's every Thursday night at 11 right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM, WDIY.org, and the free WDIY radio app. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, here with special guest Mikhail Jaffer, a senior from Moravian Academy. We just finished discussing your COVID rapid detection initiative. Could you, re-summarize the impacts of your research?
Yeah, so the COVID scan project, again, was something that was started in the like early middle of 2020. And we originally started it as a hackathon project for Facebook. And after we won some prize money from that, we recruited a few more developers from around the world and started building the software application to be like more feasible and deployable for use around the world. And so from there, we built a computer application and a phone application that could be used for the rapid detection of COVID-19, as well as a few other respiratory illnesses. And the way the kind of like artificial intelligence works in that process is you give it a data set to train it on, which is basically a group of X-ray images that are classified as either pneumonia or some other types of respiratory diseases, the normal cases, so what regular lungs look like, as well as COVID-19-based X-ray pictures. And so when you feed it through the program or the machine learning program, it essentially maps out and looks at all the details in the COVID-19 X-rays as well as the other X-rays in the data set and kind of marks the key features in each of them that differentiate it from the different classifications. And from there, it kind of learns how to basically detect the COVID-19 as well as the different respiratory illnesses within the images. And so that's essentially how the project worked, the COVID-19 detection worked.
And how are you able to accurately diagnose COVID-19 just by looking at X-rays?
Yeah, so the way you're able to accurately detect it from like a respiratory standpoint is there's key differentiating factors that, like, say, if you have pneumonia, the lung X-rays are going to be different from the X-rays of COVID-19. And so when you run it through this machine learning program, you can set markers on those differentiating factors, which allow the algorithm to actually learn the key points of those X-rays versus the other, like, respiratory illness X-rays. And so from there, it can then decide when you feed it more images and feed it data, okay, what's the difference between like this X-ray compared to like a pneumonia X-ray, and do the markers on this like new X-ray that it's feeding in match the ones in the COVID-19 one. And so with that, you're able to produce a high level of accuracy. And essentially, really, this is what doctors are doing in the medical field. When they're looking at an X-ray, they're looking for key markers that determine that, okay, this X-ray belongs to this disease or this illness. And so this essentially is allowing you to take hundreds, if not thousands, of pieces of data and apply the like findings from each of them and use it to basically detect it in different data pieces you feed it.
And is this application available for people to use? Like, where can you find it?
Okay, so for basically like healthcare uses, the way we operated was we basically downloaded them on our own devices and then sent out the devices to healthcare clinics that requested them. Most of the clinics that we worked with were based in South America and India.
And so how did they find out about you?
Oh, we reached out to them and contacted them. Because we were like operating on like little funding, there wasn't like marketing we did. We rather kind of like, this was kind of just like a proof of concept. And so through this, we reached out to them, see if they wanted to test our product. And I mean, when you're in these under-resourced areas, they're kind of willing to take the chance of using this type of technology, and it proved to be successful. And from there, we've pivoted to trying to create this application, but for a bunch of different other diseases.
So for continents like Africa, is this because X-rays are much more accessible than COVID tests?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously COVID tests are like more convenient, smaller, but again, in the heart of like the pandemic, it was very hard to get your hands on these testing materials, especially in these developing and under-resourced countries and areas. So essentially, having this technology allows you to use medical equipment that's fairly common, especially in clinics that are just set up in very scarce or remote areas. CT scans and X-rays are kind of the like normal healthcare equipment that you'd have, or they're fairly accessible in these under-resourced countries. So being able to use them and have access to them allows for this technology to be widely used.
And what does the timeline look for this application? How long does it take to get the results?
So the benefit of using computers and especially machine learning is that when you have like something like a program like this, you can feed it a lot of data and get your results back in seconds. So the processing time for this was you could feed it almost or over 1,000 images and get your results back within 12 seconds for each of those images.
All right, that's really impressive. You mentioned earlier that you had an interest in biology. Are you working on anything in that field right now?
Yeah, actually. So do you know what like protein folding is?
Yeah, so most of what I know revolves around the fact that you can determine a protein function based off of its structure.
Exactly. But you can't determine the structure, actually, unless you synthesize the amino acid sequence.
So what are the differences between the proteins that you see and like nutrition facts on food versus the proteins that you've been working with?
Yeah, so I mean, the difference between them is like if you go to like a bottle of milk or like a gallon of milk or like protein supplements, you'll see like it just says like protein and like in the nutrition facts section. But really the world of like proteins is super diverse. And so the difference between like those two types of proteins is that like proteins from like milk is really like the specific like type of protein called whey protein, which is like a byproduct and it's a composition of a bunch of different types of proteins. But they're used like that to categorize a group of proteins that are usually used for like nutritional benefits. But really, proteins are in almost every cell, and including like your saliva. But obviously, like your saliva doesn't have the nutritional benefits that milk has. So, I mean, like the proteins used in these like food products or nutrition products are like grouped proteins that they kind of just categorize because of like the general health benefits that come from them. But really, proteins are just like sequences of amino acids that kind of basically determine the functions that a cell will have.
And so how have you used protein folding in your research?
Yeah, so recently there was a discovery, like last year, through a company that Google funded called DeepMind, or it's Google-backed. And so they generated a program called AlphaFold, which is a machine learning program which allows scientists basically to develop or determine the structure of a protein given its amino acid sequence. And this was a very big problem that was solved because before this, it would take a long time to determine the structure of a protein because you had to physically synthesize it. Whereas this can determine the protein structure given an amino acid sequence with almost like 90% accuracy overall. And so you AlphaFold and Rosetta TT Fold are basically, or Rosetta Fold, but it's like spelled with two capital T's, are the biggest, or the two like largest or most accurate like computer-based programming solutions to the protein folding problem. My research within this is basically revolving off taking these programs and building off them and using it for like real-world applications that they can have today.
So what are those real-world applications?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, proteins basically determine almost all like the functions within a cell, and the cells are basically the building blocks of life. So, I mean, if we take like the recent COVID-19 vaccine that existed, right, or that was created, it basically took RNA coding, and when you injected it within yourself as like a, to like basically give a message to the cells, it taught it how to make a spike protein, which is the protein that allows the COVID-19 like cell basically to infect humans. And so given this, a human cell was able to create a spike protein, and using that spike protein, it could teach antibodies how to defend against the COVID-19 bacterial cell or the COVID-19 cells. This basically allowed the antibodies to fight against the COVID-19 cells without actually injecting a like live or dead COVID-19 cell within your body and training the antibodies to fight against it. It's a much simplified way, and I mean, it's easier to generate a vaccine through there.
And how long did all of this research take you?
So the research I'm currently working on is like still in development. So basically what I'm working on is figuring out how to take these programs that were recently developed and add ways for it to quickly determine the structure of a protein automatically instead of a human having to determine the functions of the structure, right? Because now that we have these programs that can determine structure, humans will still have to analyze them to determine the functions of the structure. Because, I mean, that's the way you determine the functions of the protein is through the structure. So figuring out a way to automatically determine the functions based on the structure. And then basically kind of reverse engineering this process and designing proteins that have functions such as like binding to T cells to prevent tumors from disabling them. And this would help with cancer treatments and more direct treatments instead of having to like an immunotherapy style treatment that's much more effective and would avoid have to going through much more like troublesome treatments like chemotherapy or radiation therapy, as well as designing different types of proteins like enzymes, which act as catalysts to reactions. And so through this, you can help create like enzymes that could clean up oil spills or help in the like industrial type industries.
And is there any other similar research out there that uses protein folding like you have?
Given the fact that these two programs, Rosetta Fold and Alpha Fold, were kind of like recently developed and have like barely been open sourced, research is fairly new. But essentially what my goal is to do is use this technology to its maximum potential and develop results that will basically change the future, right? So being able to take these results and analyze proteins that are currently being studied to help with cancer treatments, how can I speed up these tests on my own and get results faster using this technology? Or again, like I said earlier, reverse engineering this process and designing my own proteins and then going to the lab and testing them and seeing what actually comes out of them.
So you're a senior right now and you're going to college pretty soon. Is there any specific area of research that you want to work in as you move into more advanced and professional settings?
Yeah, I will probably go into kind of as I've been talking about through this podcast, my interests have mainly revolved around computer programming, different types of engineering and biology. So I'll probably go somewhere into the bioengineering or biopharmaceutical industries.
And is there any specific career that you're interested in pursuing?
Nothing in specific right now, but I mean, I hope to go into drug development or different types of therapy developments, specifically around the new emerging technologies that have come.
And so when you do this research, what kind of lab do you work in?
So, I mean, when you're talking about more computer science-based research, I was talking about with the drones earlier or the COVID detection type technologies, the good thing about computer science and what brought my interest in that is you can basically do it anywhere as long as you have a computer or a laptop to run the code on. It's just getting access to resources that will allow you to do this. So given that we have the online resources like GitHub or different types of online free to use publications that give you access to data, I mean, with computer science, you can really just do it on your laptop or whatever computer you have at home. But with more engineering and biology type projects, you'll have to start working in different types of laboratories that have the types of devices that you'll need to conduct these projects. But some of the ones some of the engineering projects you can also perform at home as long as you have a soldering iron or different types of wiring material.
So is there a specific lab in the Lehigh Valley where you do your research in?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, I've done research at the Material Engineering Lab at Lehigh University, and currently with the pivot we've made with the COVID scan project, I am working with professors at Muhlenberg University to kind of develop the technology there. But with computer science, it's less lab-based work and a lot more computer-based work. And with the protein folding project, the stage it's in right now is heavily computer and digitally focused. And for after we start creating these proteins, we'll probably move towards synthesizing them in a lab and testing them there.
And for our younger listeners, how can they get started in computer science, coding, and engineering?
I mean, one of the deterring factors that a lot of students may face when they start looking into these topics, especially the more advanced projects, is it seems complicated, doesn't seem super fun, but you have to kind of just stick with it for the first, I'd say first month or two, and then you're going to start really getting interested in it. It's kind of like playing a sport that you may not be good at first, but then you kind of develop a love for it, or a TV show where the first season's kind of bad, but I mean, it gets better as it goes on. So I mean, just kind of going for it and tinkering with it, and then kind of just focusing on projects that you want to develop versus following a curriculum, because that's really what's going to develop, I mean, hands-on learning skills as well as an interest within the topic.
And is there any advice that you would give yourself if you could go back to your younger middle school self?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say kind of try more advanced things earlier rather than waiting and kind of just focusing on the same things over and over again. Because I mean, say you develop a project, the drone project, for example, and you work with that simple technology first, or something that's not super convoluted or advanced, once you kind of you experiment with fun projects in those areas for a little too long, and then you kind of don't explore these more advanced topics that may be a bit more fun. So it's kind of don't get caught up within certain fields too much, and kind of just keep exploring and keep learning rather than trying to stay in your comfort zone.
Well said. And lastly, if our listeners wanted to learn more about you or your research, where can they go?
Yeah, so if you wanted to look more into my research or get like more in-depth information, you could always go to like moravianacademy.org, and in the search bar you could type my name, MikailJaffer, and it has a list of some of the projects I've worked on and links to where you can find more information on them.
Well, thank you so much, Mikhail, for making the time to be with us today. It's been so amazing to hear about your involvement in so many different aspects of the computer programming world.
Thank you again for having me today.
Of course, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in with us today on Teen Scientist. I'm Raina Malhotra, and this is WDIY. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse. We'll see you next time on Teen Scientist.
WDIY is Lehigh Valley Public Radio at 88.1 FM, also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For more local news and information, public affairs, and links to NPR programs, visit our website, wdiy.org.
WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station for over 25 years. Many choices, real voices.